One of them actually is just pretending to be at university for this rich guy who's paying him to go on his behalf. So that's life in India. And but it's a very nice song, yeah? Like when times are hard and you're very anxious and you feel like you're losing your grip, you just say, all is well. All is well. So that's my Dharma talk tonight. Okay, so who is this person in bed sheets with no hair? I don't know. So tonight I'm supposed to be talking on Buddhism and its power to change the world. So it's a very big subject. I hope by the end that you'll award me the Nobel Peace Prize. Does anyone have any burning issues they would like me to incorporate into my Dharma talk tonight? Come on, be brave. Throw it out there. You're all perfectly happy, well adjusted. You love your life. It must be the case. Nobody's brave enough? Guilt. Okay, talk about guilt. Yes. And? Okay. I'm very excited. I have young minds to spread my subversive ideas to. Yeah. Okay, so I work in an Indian slum with people from the caste, the social group previously known as untouchables. Yeah, there were people who did the worst and most degrading kind of work, like cleaning toilets and working with leather and that kind of thing. And they weren't allowed inside the Hindu temple because they were considered unclean. So basically, that was kind of similar to the kind of slavery situation we had going on in America and England, you know, with the black people who weren't allowed inside any white restaurants, or, you know, the apartheid situation in South Africa where white and black people were segregated. And, you know, to this day, in remote villages of India, if people... If a low-caste person dares to marry a high-caste person, they're in danger of being lynched, which means they'll round you up, torture you, and kill you as an example to other people who should choose to, you know, subvert the established order. Yeah? So, but, you know, things are changing in India as well. As multinational corporations move in, they're not so interested in what your surname is, what your caste is. They're more interested in if you have the skills to do the job. So in some way that's a good thing. And in other ways, well, we can see. So, you know, when we say Buddhism, we think somehow like navel-gazing, you know, robe-clad people living far away from society in misty mountains, isn't it? Yeah? Doesn't really have much to do with our lives. Yeah, kind of maybe has a little bit of an exotic value. Maybe it's something grandma does in front of Buddha every morning, you know, with the joss sticks and, you know, the mala and saying Amitabha, and you don't know what the hell she's doing, but makes her happy, so whatever. As long as she doesn't impose it on you, right? But now maybe you've come to a new country and you're feeling a little bit lonely for your roots. Or maybe your parents are saying, you're being good, la? Don't get into any trouble, la? So you're like, yeah, I'm going to the Buddhist group, but actually you're just really here to hang out with other, you know, people from your country. or maybe like you're a bit of a nerd and, you know, it's, you didn't really want to join the computer club, you thought you'd branch out into Buddhism. So anyway, whatever brought you here, it's all good. And even in the Buddha's time, you know, we saw there were all different kinds of people from all different walks of life coming into the Sangha, rich and poor, from many different cultures. you know, I've actually been to Vietnamese temples and they're really shocked to see me, and they come up to me and they say, how can you be Buddhist? You're white. You're Christian. It's not your roots. And I'm like, the Buddha was Indian. You know? I think they think the Buddha was Vietnamese. So it's really good that you're in Australia in some ways, because you can, you know, what's the word? You can find the essence of Buddhism. You can take away the cultural wrapping. Maybe you don't want to take away the cultural wrapping, and that's okay. If Buddhism's something very has a lot of sentimental value to you, that's also wonderful. And if you have a lot of faith, and that's okay too. But you can really take the essence and question what is Buddhism here in Australia. And you can investigate for yourself different traditions and find the one that suits you. And you'll meet some sectarian people and they'll say, you know, only this form of Buddhism was taught by the Buddha, you know. If it's not in Pali, it's not real Buddhism. If it's not in the Pali canon, or, you know, if it's not this, it's not real, or our teacher is the best. But at the end of the day, you have to decide for yourself. The Buddha said, test my teachings like a goldsmith tests gold in order to determine its purity. Yeah, not just because it's handed down from older generations, not just because it's been that way for 1,000 years, but because from your heart you experience directly the truth of peace. Yeah, and there's also another saying that all dharmas, all things, all teachings of the Buddha have one taste, the taste of liberation. Yeah, so how do you know what is real Buddhism and what is not? We can say there's four pillars of Buddhism. Don't worry, I'm going to spout the four this, the five that, the ten this, and you're going to be like, oh, I don't remember any of it, but it's okay. Planting seeds. Okay, the four pillars of Buddhism are all compounded things. Things which arise from causes and conditions are impermanent. In the nature of suffering. Why are they in the nature of suffering? Because they change. Yeah? 50% divorce rate. Money goes in the pocket and goes out of the pocket. All compounded things are impermanent in the nature of suffering and not self. What does that mean? Ah! There's no me! It's not like that. It's not like there's a big black hole and there's nothing. It just means that this, ourselves, are a label we give to something which meets at the intersection of time and space. Now I'm going to go all Stephen Hawking's on you. I won't do an impression. That would be totally not PC. What that means is, you know, this person, where is she? Somewhere. This person, Emily, right? We label her Emily, right? She hasn't always been Emily. She probably has a Chinese name or a Cambodian name, or I don't know where you're from. But, and it's, and you know, if there was no Emily's parents, there's no Emily, yeah? If there is no Australian farmers farming for her food, there's no Emily. If there is no rain and no sun, there's no Emily. And if there is no Uni of New South Wales, there is no Uni Bodhi, and there's no Emily sitting here listening to a Dharma talk. Emily is just a label we give to certain causes and conditions which arise, abide, and dissolve. One day, you know, there'll be this really old lady who somebody calls grandma, yeah, auntie, I don't know what, but it won't be the Emily we know now, yeah. And one day, you know, maybe there'll be this guy going, my wife, or a kid going, mom, yeah, I hate you. Won't be Emily anymore. It'll be mom. Yeah? Or, you know, there'll be this fabulous, powerful executive called Ms. Yap? Ms. Yap. Ms. Yap. Or there'll be this teacher, Ms. Yap. Ms. Yeah? So Emily is just like a dream. The Emily that her kindergarten friends knew is no longer here. And the Emily that her grandchildren will know is is also a dream that may never happen. So Emily is a changing phenomena that is connected to the whole universe. All of heaven and earth can be found in Emily. Yes. So she hasn't always been Emily, she won't be Emily, and she's part of an interconnected web of life that is constantly changing and has no beginning and no end. Buddhists don't view time as a linear thing, you know, alpha and omega, beginning and end. They view it as a circle, no beginning and no end, because it's like a spider's web, you know, you look for one, an infinite web. You look for one strand and then you realize one strand comes from 10 strands and each of those strands has infinite causes and conditions and so on and so forth until infinity. Because the sun has many causes and conditions. Even the matter of our bodies, like atoms, made up of atoms, and they can't even find the subparticles of an atom, right? Further and further and further until they just kind of oh man, we just can't find it. And you know, even they're saying our body contains some of the same matter as stars. And every 3 months, every cell in your body has completely regenerated itself. I'm sure you know these things better than me, you're very well educated. But you get the idea, right? You're not permanent. And yet you think you are, you agonize over it. Do I look fat in here? Will any boy ever like me? But actually, you know, it's just like a dream, you know, nothing to obsess over, really. Yeah, and we think of death as a defeat, you know, when somebody says when we hear of somebody who died, we feel very bad, like it's a tragedy, it's unnatural, it's unfair. But death is also a part of life. It's the price you pay for being born. And it can come at any time. Any time. So what are you doing to make your life count? Yeah? Okay, so yes, sorry, the third pillar. I do tend to go off on tangents. All things are impermanent in the nature of suffering, not self. And nirvana is peace. Enlightenment is the end of suffering. That means when your mind is completely purified of delusion. When you're fully able to really empathize and connect with others and your mind is purified of all ego and attachment and anger. You know, and there's all kinds of qualities we would assign to that term enlightenment, but I'm not gonna go into that tonight. That's how you know what is Buddhism and what is not. If it has those qualities, then you know it's Buddhism. If it's not talking about those qualities, then it's not Buddhism. Okay? So you can explore, you know, the three yanas, Theravada, Mahayana, Vajrayana. And you know there is 84,000 teachings of the Buddha to suit the 84,000 different states of confusion and karmic propensities. Yeah, that people have. Because obviously, you know, the same teaching cannot be applied to an illiterate village woman, old lady, than it would be to apply to, say, a physicist. Yeah, they need different teachings according to their understanding, according to their perception. Yeah, so the Dharma is taught in so many different ways to suit so many different people and ways of understanding according to their level, you can say. Yeah, doesn't mean one is better than the other. Just means different strokes for different folks. Yeah? So don't knock it till you've tried it. Don't become sectarian. But at the same time, you know, it's good to find a teacher, find a sangha, and stick with one thing for a while. That you're clear, you know, what is the path, where you are on the path, and where you want to go. What is the power of Buddhism to change the world? Many people, certainly many Westerners, like Buddhism because it's like very individualistic, you know? It's like me and my own mind and my own peace. But I'm sure most of you who've grown up in Asia don't understand Buddhism in that way. You think of Buddhism as something to do with society and culture, right? It's a code of living and what you do on special days when you go to the temple and pray for some good luck. something like that. You know, it's got a cultural context, which I think is a really good thing, because so much isolation, depression, materialism and meaninglessness comes about from us being too cut off from each other. We can't even look at each other in the street. How weird is that? If you want to find a husband or wife, you have to go on the internet, onto a dating site, you know? It's so weird, really. Yeah? And you don't think you look good enough, so you insert some plastic into your face. Half the world's living on $1.25 a day and you pay $30,000 for a boob job. Do you think that's a healthy world? Is that a world where people are connected with each other? Where people really see each other for their hearts, for their human values, for their human qualities? Because the only beauty that does not fade is a kind and compassionate heart. And people can feel someone who has compassion as soon as they walk in the room. And people are hungry for love. But they think that there is only one kind of love, and that it's got to do with sex. And that's why everyone is obsessed by sex, you know, that blissful, especially that in love phase, right? Everybody wants to be in that first in love phase. And you won't know what I mean until you're about 35 and you've got two kids and a mortgage and you're like, who are you and why did I marry you? Yeah. But, yes, might be ironic to come to a Dharma talk and hear talking about love from a monk or nun, right? But actually, I think since I have ordained as a nun, I have more love in my life, because all beings are like my family, and I can love them without any kind of expectation or stickiness, you know, like, give me my love, heroine, you're mine, you know, you make me happy, I'm so... And what if they stop making you happy, you know? What if they stop giving you that positive feedback and they're like, I need more space to myself. You're like, get out of my life, you've betrayed me. Yeah? What if they say, they change, you know? Like, what if they decide to become a born-again Christian or something and suddenly it's very hard to live with them? Yeah? You took away my love, heroine, I hate you. My good feelings. There's a lot of expectation and attachment. It's very conditional, that kind of love, yeah? And that's why it's so fragile. And who here has broken up with someone that they really love? Come on, be honest. It must be at least half of you. Yeah. And it's really hard, isn't it? It's very heartbreaking when you imagined, you felt like, wow, this person is so close to me. You never felt that kind of love. And then suddenly there they are, you know, like going with someone else, saying they don't want to be with you anymore. Yeah. So that kind of love is very painful when it breaks. So in Buddhism we try to, I think we need to understand Buddhism has a social context. Buddhism has a way of being in the world. And it's not just for the individual. It's for, because, you know, we think that when we go away on meditation retreat that we're just going and getting rid of our own suffering. Yeah? But actually, the suffering of the world comes with you. You know, the suffering of society is in your own heart. And you maybe think, I don't give a damn about society. I just want a good job and a lot of money and happiness. Yeah? But actually, there's so much suffering just living like that. You know, just caring about yourself. Because the world is still there, so you might as well deal with it. You have to be part of it. Society consists of individuals. You are part of society. It is an unavoidable fact, unless you go and live on a mountain. Yeah? So if you want the world to be a better place, newsflash, get off your ass and do something about it. A lot of people think that Buddhism is an otherworldly religion. It has nothing to say about the modern world, and somehow it's very hard to bridge the gap between what we understand Buddhism to be, which is grandma with the joss sticks in front of Buddha, or some, you know, weird exotic thing that we saw on National Geographic, you know, with David Attenborough. The monks from Tibet are now emerging from their 3-year retreat like the majestic mountain goat. Yes. Like when I go shopping, people take photos of me and point and laugh, you know, as if I'm like, actually, it's a good story. I was in India, and I was in the marketplace, you know, and there was a man dressed as a woman in a bright yellow sari with sequins all over it. She's like, hey, hey, ek rupi do. And, you know, she's like, if she's saying to them, you know, if you don't give me money, I'll curse you. And it's like people are very afraid of the curse of these she-males. And it's a hard life, actually, because it's really the only way you can be openly gay in a society which is so conservative outside the metropolitan area. But the blessing of these women is said to also be very powerful. So, you know, this woman was walking by, swinging her hips, you know, kind of speaking in a very gruff voice and being very suggestive. And all the shopkeepers were just going. And I thought they were staring. I mean, fair enough, you know, I would stare at a man dressed as a woman going, hi, hi, groupido. But actually, they were staring at me. I realized they were staring at me, not the drag queen. And I was like, I get more attention than a drag queen. And then the worst thing is I understand what they're saying, and they're saying, why is a foreigner dressed as a holy person? And is it a man or a woman? And if it's a woman, why does she have no hair? Yeah. And is it Buddhist or a Hare Krishna? I don't know. How weird. Yeah. So they're saying all these, just whatever comes into their head, because they can't they don't think you speak their language. Anyway, where was I? Yes. Buddhism has a context to change the world. It's not just an otherworldly religion. It has a relevance to your life. Why? Because you suffer. Hopefully you're intelligent enough to know that you suffer, right? Life is not just suffering, but life has an element of, it's like even if everything is going well, there's a feeling, there must be something more. Surely there must be something more. Like, I grew up in a country where I had everything. I never knew the feeling of hunger. And, you know, I had a loving mother and father, a good house, good school, enjoyable pastimes. And yet I was always dissatisfied. I always wanted something else. And, you know, I would see a toy on TV and I'd say, Mom, I need that, you know? And she'd get it for me, and a few months later I'd be like, Mom, I need this, I promise I'll never ask for anything else. That will give me happiness. But only this shiny new thing gave me happiness for a short time, and then again it's gone. Yeah. And then I become a teenager, and I find a boyfriend, and he's a shiny new thing that gives me happiness for a while, and then it's gone. Where is this elusive happiness? And then my father dies. Yeah. And then I'm feeling in the depths of despair, and suicidal, and thinking, what's the point of life? The Buddha asked this question 2,600 years ago. He gave up a kingdom. He gave up a harem of 100 beautiful women. And he didn't. It wasn't that he was running away from his life or abdicating responsibility. He was sincerely, from the depths of his heart, seeking a way out of suffering. So if you suffer, then Buddhism is relevant to you. Buddhism's relevance is timeless. And if you have a heart, if you know what it is to live, you will realize that you are not alone in your suffering, and that happiness is not a personal matter. Happiness is a communal matter. And we say, you know, to our boyfriend or our girlfriend or our parents, love you, mwah, mwah. Yeah? But love is understanding. If you don't understand the people you claim to love, your love is a prison. I love you as long as you help me with my exam. I love you as long as you worship me like I'm a goddess. I love you as long as you, you know, don't get obese. Yeah? I love you for this, I love you for that. I love you as long as you're part of our goth band. But don't, you know, don't change. Never change. Yeah? So our love, we need to look at our love. We always want love, but are we giving love? Are we giving the kind of love that we want to receive from others? Are we giving the kind of understanding that we want to receive from others? And when you understand others, you don't feel alone. You feel part of something. Suddenly you're connected. And it's a much more fulfilling way to live. Yeah. And that you find suddenly you have all these friends. And it's impossible to hate anymore. You may not agree with people. You may not condone their actions. But you understand where they're coming from. You understand the suffering, the confusion that causes you, them to harm you or to harm others. And that is a very powerful thing. That is the power of non-violence. Sometimes people think that if you're non-violent, you're, kind of... Oh, no, it's okay. You're like a pansy, you know, you're not strong, you're not powerful, you're weak, you're passive. But actually sometimes to stand up in the face of impossible odds and injustice and to not repay hate for hate is the strongest action you can take, the most powerful action you can take. And if you think that non-violence is not powerful, then how can a little brown man in a loincloth bring down the British Empire? Yeah? It would have been impossible for the Indians to face the British with military power because all of their resources were tied up in the British economy. But to stand up with the knowledge of truth, the knowledge that what they were fighting for, human dignity and equality, and access to their own resources and rulership, self-rule, self-governing ability, to know that they were standing up for human rights was the most powerful, truth was the most powerful weapon they had. And in the end, amazingly, actually, they succeeded. You know, they didn't have to have a war. I mean, many people suffered in prison and some people died, you know, but it could have been much worse. And I think we can learn from that, you know. Buddha said, hatred can never be replaced with hatred. Hatred can only be overcome by love. This is the eternal law. Yeah, so it doesn't just mean that you're there like to your enemy, you know, I love you, may you be well and happy, but it's like a real understanding, you know, like I see what you're doing wrong. I see you killing my fellow countrymen, you know, and I don't agree. And I'm the Buddha said, the earth is my witness. I'm here to witness this injustice. And sometimes to stand up for truth is a very brave and powerful thing to do. Yeah? Like Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma. Many, many years she's been under house arrest, yeah? But they can't kill her. She's too powerful now. Too powerful a symbol of truth. So if you can't use Buddhism in your daily life to face your daily problems with your enemy, with your difficult flatmate, with your stressful exams, then there's something wrong with your Buddhist practice. If you don't know how to sum up Buddhism in 10 minutes to teach a child, there is something wrong with your Buddhist practice, because Buddhism is a way of being, the way you breathe, the way you eat, the way you smile, the way you embrace your loved one. Yeah? Like, I bet you in the temple, grandma never said, the way you embrace your loved one can also be a form of Buddhism. Yeah? My teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my teachers, Thich Nhat Hanh, he invented this thing called hugging meditation. Yeah? So you can go out in the park at lunchtime and you can try. People will think you're a bit weird. But, normally when you hug someone, you're just kind of like, your mind is racing and, you know, depending on who you're hugging, I guess, but you're not really there present with them. You want something from them, yeah? But isn't it nice just to hug someone without any expectation and to just be there with them, to be a comfort to them. Yeah? And to just breathe and be present with them. And in that moment, what you do is sacred because you're fully present. You're not trying to exploit them. You're just really there for them. And to me, that's the purest form of love. Yeah? So that's a better way to be with your loved one, or your mother, or your father. That's a real way of being, you know. And normally, you know, we go through our lives and we think we're living. What does she mean we're not living? You know, I go to college. I eat, I travel, I'm alive, I go out partying, I'm enjoying myself. But are you really alive, or are you just like a zombie, you know, distracted all the time? Are you really touching life? Are you really alive? Or are you just on autopilot? Did you remember the taste of your breakfast this morning? Can you remember the quiet and curious eyes of a child on the bus? Did you see the spring blossoms? Did you see the full moon? Did you look across the room and see someone who needs your help? Someone who's isolated and depressed? Someone who has suffered just like you? Yeah? No. Why? Because you're just going somewhere, always going somewhere. And as soon as you climb one mountain, you plant a flag there and you don't even enjoy the view, you just go down, oh, I've got to go to that mountain now. And people say, when you finish school, you'll be happy. When you find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, true love, the one, capital letters, you'll be happy. When you pass your exams, you'll be happy. When you get your degree, you'll be happy. When you get your job, you'll be happy. When you get a mortgage, you'll be happy. When you get married and have kids, you'll be happy. And when the kids leave home, you'll be happy. When you retire, you'll be happy. And then there's nothing to be happy about anymore, so you start looking back and going, that's when I was happy. So happiness never comes. Happiness is always an idea in the future or the past. Never really living. Only grasping, chasing, like a headless chook. You know, the head is gone, but the legs are still running. Yeah? So, do you want to live your life like that? I don't. I don't think a life like that is worth living.
May I ask one question? Is it happy? Is it now? You're happy now. Did you always think you're happy? Are you happy?
That's a good question. And is happiness an idea, or is it an experience? It's an experience. If you don't have peace, if you don't know how to just abide with a peaceful heart, with a loving heart, with an open heart, and see, to just be present with life as it's unfolding in the present moment, you're never going to be happy tomorrow. If you don't know how to be happy in this moment, you won't be happy in the next moment. Happiness is now. Peace is now. I remember when I was a hippie, I would go to protests, you know, and we'd go, we want peace! Didn't feel very peaceful. You know, we hate you! Corporations, it's all your fault! You know, but we're living on your tax dollar. And we're like, don't chop down the forest! But we're lighting up our tally-hos from the Indonesian rainforest. Yeah, we don't see that we're part of the problem. Yeah? And we're not being peace. It's so easy to blame others, to not take responsibility for the part we play. Activism like that will never work. You have to engage. Yeah? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Yeah? You have to engage. You have to understand and embrace and connect with the people that you perceive to be the enemy. And maybe one day you'll realize the enemy is also you. I know one nun, she was very angry one day. We were on retreat and she was very angry. She found that someone hadn't washed their bowl and their plate. And she was thinking in her mind, you know, it's this person, this damn person that never washes their plate, you know? This Henry guy. Never washes his plate, you know? I'm sure it's Henry. I'm sure, you know? And she's been building up this rhetoric in her head, this guy, this Henry, you know, I just want him out of here. He's like a blemish on the name of Buddhism. He's like always late to class and he doesn't listen and he falls asleep in meditation and he's just a pathetic excuse for Buddhism. He shouldn't be here. He's not serious. You know, and then she looks at the bowl, she looks at the cup and she realizes it's her name. Henry washed his cup. You know, and the people we're bombing, they're our brother and sister. What we do to others, we do to ourselves. When we take no responsibility for, we designate our personal responsibility to a corporation. You know, it's not personal. Nothing in developed countries is personal. Not personal. Just the way it is. Yeah? Not personal. So the fact that we buy clothes made by people in a sweatshop, 12-year-old girls in the Philippines who are not going to school, you know, it's not personal. The fact that we're polluting the water because we want to make some chemical, it's not personal. You know, for the fishermen in that village, it's very personal. Yeah. We're chopping down the rainforest. It's not personal. But for, you know, the tribal people in the Amazon and the, you know, the monkeys and the elephants and the birds who are losing their home, it's personal, isn't it? So you can't just think that it's not personal. Everything is interconnected, and therefore what you do to others, you do to yourself. Even this human body is given to you by others. The fact that you can look good on a Friday night and, you know, rock some guy or girl's world, all due to the kindness of others. So to just take and take and take and not think that you're making an impact. And you know, often when we're young, we kind of, I don't know what people these days are doing, but it's kind of cool in university to kind of go to protests and think that everything that's screwed up in the world is because of the older generation. So much more comforting than taking responsibility for our own actions. But everything we do has an impact. Everything we consume has a price. So what are you consuming? Who is it made by? Where does it come from? What is the impact of it? If you are a Buddhist, you understand interconnectedness and you know that your actions have an effect. This arises because that is. This is because that is. Right? So say we take someone who's medium height, yeah? And then we bring someone very short and we say, oh yes, he is very tall. But then we bring someone even taller. So he's medium now. Suddenly it's changed. He's only tall in relation to short. He's only, you know, brown in relation to white. Woman in relation to man. This is because that is. If there is no you and me, there is no corporation. There is no deforestation. There is no polluted river. We're all part of the problem. And therefore we have to take responsibility, be more mindful of what we consume. Yeah, there is fair trade, there is environmental movement, there is growing your own food, going on to, maybe it sounds like a very unrealistic thing for you right now because you're all worried about your financial futures and you have to pay off your student loans, but somehow you have to find a balance for a future to be possible. And to be a Buddhist is to be non-violent, to do no harm. So if you're buying something very cheap that's made by in a sweatshop, you're depriving people of their livelihood, a dignified life. So think about where it comes from. And maybe buy less and wear it longer and make sure it comes from the right place, a good place. Yeah. There's nothing cool about a Nike shoe made in a Filipino sweatshop. Nothing cool. And you know, if you don't know your power as an individual to vote, to preserve human rights, to preserve democracy, to preserve freedom of speech, none of those things seem very important until you're suddenly deprived of that. Yeah? Yeah, like no one cares about feminism. But what if you go to a country where if you wear nail polish you can lose a finger? What if that's your friend? Suddenly it's personal. What if you're traveling in a country that has no, I don't know, no good healthcare? Then suddenly the fact that half the world is living on $1.25 a day becomes personal. Yeah? To just shut your eyes is an act of irresponsibility. So what I propose as a model for, I mean, it's not all depressing, you know? It's not like you should, thou shalt, like fear-based. It's very inspiring. Yeah, to live with compassion is to find meaning and purpose and joy. And what we propose in Buddhism as a way for a spiritual warrior to live, a way for someone who wants to find true peace, true happiness in the present moment, is the six perfections. Okay, so who knows what the six perfections are? Yeah, apart from the dude who's pointing at the board. Does anyone know, like, without looking at the board? I mean, does anyone know, has anyone heard of them? Yeah? One person knows. And all of you say, well, half of, at least 60% of you would say, I'm Buddhist. Okay. So there's a ideal in Buddhism called the Bodhisattva, right? Bodhi is enlightened, Sattva is being, or a compassionate spiritual warrior, an idealist, striving for true peace and happiness. And you think, you know, all of this thing you're talking about is really interesting, but it doesn't really apply to me passing my exams and being happy with my boyfriend. You know, I'm going to continue to buy from Filipino sweatshops, so. And I like my iPhone, even if it was made by an African child searching in the mines for zinc. So, you know, it doesn't really relate to me somehow. But actually, if you have compassion, it benefits you too. Yeah, if you want a good relationship, you need compassion. If you want to not be part of the 50% divorce rate, you need compassion. If you want to have children, you're going to need a hell of a lot of compassion. And if you want to live in a world that doesn't make you insane, then you need compassion because you're part of that world. So the first one is generosity. Is there anyone here who thinks generosity is a bad thing? No, but very few of us practice it, you know? We're like, we see some person in the street with a tin, you know, Red Cross or something, we're like avoiding them, isn't it? I'm a poor student. Yeah? And then later on it's like, I'm too busy. But if you want to receive, you have to give, isn't it? And we have a saying in India that the hand of the giver is never empty. And if your hand is closed, you can't receive anything. Yeah, what goes around comes around. Haven't you noticed that with kind of speech? What you say comes back to you. When you're really irritated and angry and snappy, that's the day when the worst things happen, isn't it? Bad karma rains down. Yeah? When you're happy, everything, the whole world looks good. Yeah? So generosity is the foundation of Buddhist practice. It's like good karma, like petrol in your car, the petrol of the spiritual life. If you don't have good karma, generosity, then you don't have... harder to get in good meditation states, it's harder to find peace and happiness. And also, you know, if you're generous, it attracts friends. And it, you know, you want to know how to get your friends into Dharma, be generous. So there are three kinds of generosity. One is giving material things. So half the world's living on $1.25 a day. So if you're not that half, awesome, you're lucky. But if you are aware of that half, do something about it. May not be that you give a lot, but giving something can make a difference. Last year I saved the life of 5 children. How much it cost? $20 per child. How much can you buy a child for in India? $150. How much to get someone shot? $200. How much for a safe childbirth? $50. How much to sponsor a child to go to school so they have a good future? $40 a month. So a little bit of money can go a long way, really. Giving Dharma. So obviously in Buddhism we don't try to convert, we just give timely, you know, it's the best thing you can do is just to be there for someone to listen. And guys, when girls tell you their problems, they don't just want you to suggest an answer, they just want you to listen. So that's some good advice for you. You know, it just helps you get it off your chest, isn't it? Yeah? But the gift of Dharma surpasses all other gifts. Because the best thing you can give someone is a realization, an insight into the truth. Okay, and then the third kind of giving is freedom from fear. So maybe that means that you stand up for some kind of injustice, against some kind of injustice. Or you help someone find peace inside themselves. Yeah, but you can only do that if you practice, if you have your own spiritual practice, if you're being peace. Yeah. Mostly people who are like fundamentalist, religious type people, they're really insecure about their beliefs, so they have a very strong need to convince others. But if we are very strong in our own practice, in our own experience of peace, then we're very open and we have a good sense of humor. And we don't need to convert anyone, they just come to us. They're like, what do you want, man? I want some of that. Yeah. It's called mindfulness. The second kind of perfection is morality. So we don't really like hearing about morality. We think it's like Victorian women in corsets feeling guilty about everything. Sin, 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 thou shalt not, right? They're like, stuff that, man, I want to do what I want to do. It's my life. It's freedom to do whatever I want. But, you know, sometimes if you go on a drunken night and you wake up in the bed of someone you don't know and, you know, you're just kind of missing class and you just think your life is out of control, maybe you do realize, like Jenna said, freedom's just another way of saying nothing left to lose. Most of you probably haven't gone down the extreme paths that I've gone down. But, yeah, the freedom has a limit, you know. And what is freedom anyway? The best kind of freedom is freedom from confusion, from negative emotion. But essentially, morality doesn't mean, it's not something imposed from the outside. We say in the five precepts, I undertake the training. It's something we take from our own side because we understand that if we're not mindful, if we're not aware of our body, speech, and mind, if we don't try to keep our actions positive, wholesome, we harm ourselves and we harm others. Yeah, and that can never lead to happiness. If you look at most of the harm the world contains, it has come through cherishing only this self. All the joy the world contains, it has come through cherishing others. Yeah? So avoiding, morality means avoiding negative actions, killing, stealing, lying, sexual misconduct, alcohol and intoxicants. I mean, just look at how much, how many road accidents there are with alcohol, how much violence, people stabbing each other in King's Cross, how much rape, how much, things we wouldn't normally do that we do when we're drunk, and how much money, you know, all the grain that's used in the creation of alcohol could be used to feed people in developing countries. It's not the most ethical industry. People say, well, I only have one glass of wine, but most of us don't have. And look at why you're getting drunk, you know? Mostly you're getting drunk to just forget your troubles, to get blotto, not just to enjoy an elegant conversation with your partner over wine. Isn't it? You know, look at Sydney on a Friday night. It's not elegant. It's not civilized. do positive actions. Yeah, most of us, we're unhappy and then we think, why? We come to the monk and then, why? The Buddha said, if you want to know your past, look at your present circumstances. if you want to know your future, whether you'll be happy or not, look at your present actions. And no one can save you, you have to save yourself by your actions, by your thoughts, cleaning up your act. Not killing, not stealing, saving life, being generous, being kind, helping others, offering service. It's such a buzz to do a bit of volunteer work, to go and read to a blind person, to help an old lady across the street, to sit with an old lady as she has a cup of tea. It's a buzz, actually. Trust me, I've tried every kind of buzz there is. There's no buzz better than helping others. There are ways that you... I think we won't go there. Okay, the next one is patience. Okay, patience when wronged, because it's so easy to go, you. Yeah. Patience to bear hardship for the Dharma, you know? Like, my God, this Buddhist center isn't aircon. Oh my God, like... And this monk or nun is, like, so ancient. Like, she just has no idea of my life. And, you know, patience to just kind of sit it out. Oh my God, my knees are killing me. Why am I supposed to look at my breath anyway? I'd rather just go and hang out with that cute guy in the front row. But actually, a little bit of patience. You know, you may have a breakthrough. You never know when it's going to happen. A little bit of patience, like, well, you know, this five precepts thing is a bit strange. It's a bit old-fashioned. But actually, maybe it will stop me from making a lot of bad karma. It will give me a life of stability and peace, and I won't be a walking contradiction, like I'm a Buddhist but I'm a raving alcoholic, yeah, or I'm a Buddhist but I'm a malicious gossip, yeah, or I'm a Buddhist but I support the arms trade and child trafficking or pornography, yeah. Can't, not possible. Patience, yeah, and then finally patience to face the truth, you know. So Buddhism's not just about being happy. It's about, like, when I was younger and I was looking for happiness, I looked at, like, New Age stuff, you know, and you'd read a book and you'd feel really happy for a while. But it talked about happiness, light, positive things, think positive, but it didn't talk about, you know, how do I feel, what do I do when I'm ready to blow my brains out? How do I feel? What do I do when I argue with my partner? How do I feel? What do I do when I doubt myself? When I am so anxious I can't get out of bed? When I'm feeling so guilty? Yeah? Feeling like I'm the most rotten person in the world. And Buddhism addresses those issues. Buddhism is not just for the good times of life. Buddhism is also for the dark times. And the Buddha said, how do you deal with that? You know it as it is, you acknowledge there is suffering, and you acknowledge there is a cause of suffering, which is a misunderstanding that has arisen due to ignorance. And you acknowledge there is an end of suffering, which is letting go. Breathing in, I know I'm feeling self-loathing. Breathing out, I know this too shall pass. And you just let a little bit of space between your thoughts, and you realize, I'm not going to feel this way forever. Yeah, and slowly, maybe after a few days, it can lift. Because you ask most people who tried to kill themselves a few days later, do you still want to kill yourself? No. It passes. So, you know, slowly with your meditation practice, most kinds of non-clinical depression and simple forms of anxiety can be relieved. It gives you a great sense of well-being and connectedness and peace. It's very good for health and dealing with stress. Makes you more patient, less angry, more stable. You don't just practice meditation for yourself, you practice it for your partner, the ones you claim to love, and the world. Diligence. So diligence to meditate even when you don't feel like it. Diligence to help organize some Dharma event. Diligence to sit in the committee meeting. when all they're talking about is the disco they went to or the karaoke bar they visited, or you feel you have nothing in common with any of them and you wonder why you're there. Diligence, when you're doubting the whole point of life, you know, to keep searching, to keep trying, to keep facing yourself and not run away. People say, oh, you're a monk or a nun, you're running away. Yeah? I'm not the one watching TV, taking drugs, you know, opening the fridge, not able to sit alone with myself. I have no more escape. My vows don't allow me to escape anymore. I can't drink, I can't smoke, I can't dance. What is left to me but to face my own mind? Who's running away? Yeah. So diligence is to face your own demons and to slowly allow them, to release them and allow them to be transformed, to give them a bit of air and space. And slowly you see, if you dwell in the present moment, you can almost deal with anything, and you can be there for others also. You know, even the most unbearable people. Sometimes people are very angry, you know, and they're like, just make me do it. Yeah? Just come on. Yeah? But if you don't feed the fire dies on its own. Okay? And who gets hurt most? The one who throws the hot coals? The one who you throw the hot coals at, or the one who's holding the hot coals? Who has to deal with the vitriol, obsession, hatred? It's the one who's angry. So it's in your own best interest to forgive, to let go. It may take a long time. You don't want to be doing a spiritual bypass. I'm fine. May you be well and happy. May you rot in hell. It's genuine. You know, you really hurt me. You really hurt me. I don't agree with you. I can't understand you. But I can see that you're confused. You're suffering. And I know that the little bit of suffering you're giving me is only a small part of what you yourself must be. I wouldn't want to be in your head. So may you be well and happy. So diligence is also, you know, to be diligent to practice the Dharma in daily life, to practice kindness and patience when you really just want to slap someone and snap and make an instant judgment and write them off and close your heart and not face your own fear. Yeah. Then number five is concentration. So, you know, if you're living in the past, you're dreaming about the future, you're never in the present. You know, oh, he broke up with me, oh. 6 months have gone by, and still there's that guy going past your dorm every day, smiling at you, but still, oh, he broke up with me, oh. You're not noticing. You're not living in the present. You're not enjoying your youth, the years of your college. You're just living for what? Why can't I find the one? Sometimes we're looking so hard that we don't see what's right in front of us. We don't see, you know, today I woke up and I have a roof over my head. Today my stomach is full. Today I have at least one friend. You know, we always think about what we don't have instead of what we do have. And to live like that, like a hungry ghost, is to live in perpetual dissatisfaction, to never be content, to be alienated from your own heart and any kind of happiness. The economy runs on this, actually. You're not enough. You will not be enough until you weigh this much and you have skin color, like in India, fair and lovely. Yeah. They're putting bleach on their face. Yeah? Hello, you are, your pigmentation is suited to your country. You know, I'm like getting skin cancer in India here. Yeah. So, yeah. And you watch on TV during the day, like they really must think that housewives are morons because there's so many ads for losing weight. You know, like, I'm happy now because I lost 30 kg and, you know, everything else. Like, I'm never going to be depressed again because I'm the perfect weight, you know. My butt is tight. I mean, it's so superficial, it's such an insult to the purpose of human existence. Because sure, everything's going to go south eventually. But at your funeral, do you want people to stand up and say, you know, she had buns of steel? Or do you want them to say, she, you know, saved a village. She sponsored 5,000 children to go to school. She performed life-saving operations in, you know, the worst famine ever. Or, you know, she was always there for me. Or do you want it to say, you know, she sold the most Avon makeup bags ever, and she was our best, I don't know. Like, you can see what, you should ask yourself, what do I want people to say about me at my funeral? And I'm pretty sure, you know, if someone told you you've got cancer today, you would not be worried, you know? Like, do I have buns of steel? Things like this. Did I get an A or an A plus? None of those things matter at the end of the day. What matters is, did I live well? Did I love well? Did I learn to let go? Really, think about, you're intelligent people. Why are you letting the media, the advertising agencies manipulate you into you losing the purpose of your birthright? To be connected to each other, to make a change in the world, to preserve the planet's resources, to care for yourself, to care for the planet, to care for the people around you. What could be better than that? Yeah? An iPhone can't love you. It's enjoyable. I'm also having an Android phone my mother bought for me. But it's not the purpose of life. It's not worth mortgaging your soul for. Yeah? You have to find a balance. Somehow you have to survive, obviously. Not all of you want to become monks and nuns. But you have to find a balance. It's insane to just think about yourself when the planet is on the verge of, you know, when there's so many natural disasters. And every day 24,000 children die due to poverty-related illness. What would we do if the news said, this year, 1.46 million Australian children died of poverty-related illness? We would be outraged. This year, you know, 1 in 3 Singaporean women were beaten by their husbands. We would be shocked. Yeah? Today, your neighbor sent her 7-year-old child to fight rats the size of dogs, or cats, sorry, to sort through the garbage to get enough food to fill her belly. You would call child protection, wouldn't you? If you saw your neighbor was doing that. But in India, it's like, that's life. You know, to be so hungry that you sell your child as a servant because you know at least they're going to get food in their belly. You give your daughter away into the sex trade because at least she won't starve. She might die of HIV, but she won't starve. Better to have food today and die of HIV tomorrow. That's what some South African sex workers said. To live in a world like that, and you're worried about, you know, I need clear cell. Yeah? I need fair and lovely. Yeah? My hair is long and strong. It's so stupid. Can't you see how you're being manipulated? Isn't it a kind of sickness? Like, have any of you seen The Matrix? Do you want the red pill or the blue pill? You should watch it. It's very Buddhist. Yeah? They're like living this life, but actually they're in pods, which is, you know, the energy's been taken from them and feeding this whole kind of nightmarish machine-like existence. Anyway, I can't think of any more modern movies that kind of portray that. I'm a bit out of touch. But you can see it's kind of insane to be obsessed about your pimples when today 24,000 children died of starvation, right? You can see that, right? Yeah. And it's much more meaningful to get up and think. Waking up this morning, I smile. 24 hours, brand new hours are before me. I vow to live fully in each moment and to look at beings with the eyes of compassion. Not just, you know, what can that hot babe give me, but what can I give others? And, you know, then the hot babes will just come on their own. Bodhisattvas are never short of friends. Siddhartha, before he became enlightened, the Buddha, was surrounded by the most affluent, successful people of his age. You know, so concentration is needed. Control over your own mind. You can't be happy without control over your own mind. Because you let your mind go down these roads, you know? I'm worthless. I'm useless. I suck. The world, there's no hope. I can never do what I dream of doing. Whose fault is it that you're unhappy? Uncontrolled mind. That's why we meditate. Clean out the junk. Can't be happy with a mind that's full of 30 years of self-hatred and junk. And where did it come from? Hello, playground bully. Bye. Gone. Yeah, just see it. And it's gone. Wisdom. Wisdom is the final fruit of the six perfections. But ideally, wisdom should be in every perfection you practice. So when you give, you're not giving money to an alcoholic. You're giving in a way that your giving is meaningful, that you're giving more. Like, for example, in India, we don't just go and go to some slum people and say, here's money, because they'll go and drink it, right? But we say, here's job training. And then we give them a loan so they can start their own business and empower themselves. We give in a way that keeps on giving. Wisdom is understanding interconnectedness and not holding on to this rigid me. Yeah? So can you understand now when I talked about interconnectedness that happiness is not a personal matter, it's a communal matter. And social engagement is part of the very fabric of Buddhism. If you can't walk and talk your spiritual beliefs in the way you live, in the way you eat, in the way you sleep, in the way you smile, then your religion, your spiritual path is, you're a hypocrite. How does a Buddhist eat? They eat in silence. They offer the food to the Triple Gem. And they enjoy having food. They enjoy the effort that's been put into the meal. And it becomes a sacred act. Yeah? Your mind is not going to the past, going to the future. And you're just there with your friends, enjoying the food. And when you live this way, and you know, maybe every 2 weeks or once a month you can have a day of mindfulness where you just put aside everything else and you read some Dharma books, you do some rituals, you meditate, you have a discussion group, you take a walk in the bush and you just do it silently with breathing. You know, that's your day of mindfulness to reconnect with what you most deeply value. And at least 2 weeks a year, it's really good to go to a retreat center and do a retreat to water those seeds in you so that you're not just a Buddhist in name, but in practice. Does anyone have any questions? I hope what I'm saying is getting through to you. I know it's going on a bit long. And it's been a long time since I was 23.
Can I ask one more?
Sure.
When you meditation, you I only have a lot of saliva come up.
Mm.
Is it the part of pain or?
How is your mouth when you meditate? Is it closed?
I'm closed.
Closed now.
Closed mouth.
Mm.
I only have a saliva come out.
You know.
Is it something that
more than usual?
Sometimes I think that I must swallow it.
Maybe you're just aware, you know? You're just aware. Like, it's always going on, but when you meditate, you're just aware.
But I don't know. I just kind of reaction.
Yeah.
To the saliva. But they come out to the mouth, and I swallow it.
So no big deal. Just swallow. That's it. Keep meditating. Swallow. Keep meditating.
Is it to connect anything to the brain or?
I don't know, you know. I wouldn't worry about it too much. It's just plumbing, yeah? The contents is more important than the vehicle, right?
Yeah.
So just allow it to be and just keep meditating. More important is the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyone else? come on, guys. Surely I must have made... I think you're all a bit tired, but I'm sure if I said, let's go to the pub, you would suddenly perk up. Come on. I said lots of controversial things and told some bad jokes. You should be happy, jovial. I noticed on the back of the toilet door there's this sign that says, you know, please do not squat on the bowl. I thought that was very funny. And then someone had written underneath, or you might get through to the Department of the Ministry of Magic, and Professor Umbridge will be very unhappy. But I thought it was funny that we're in a place where people have to be told not to squat on the toilet. It's good to have a sense of humour. That's another part of Buddhism, you know, not to take things or yourself too seriously, because everything's impermanent. And at the end of the day, people will remember your kindness, not how much you, you know, how perfect you were. They remember your kindness, your humanity. And if you think about the people we admire throughout history, it's not like, you know, can you even remember some names of supermodels from the 80s? I can hardly think of any. And probably people in 30 years' time won't remember any of them. But names like Nelson Mandela, the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, these are names we remember, people we admire, because of their humanity, their compassion, their conviction, their courage, their selflessness. Not because they were beautiful or sexy or because they could, you know, do the Gangnam style. Yeah? So think about it, and then think what really is important in your life. Don't waste your youth on trivial things. Don't insult your own intelligence. Don't lose your time in trivial things. I see young people like on the way, on the train home, you know, just playing some kind of mindless game. Not present to their life, like a zombie, yeah? What is the world going to become if everybody is absent, mentally absent? Lights are on, but nobody's home. No one gives a damn. Yeah? It's not going to be a good world. Wake up.
I read somewhere they say that when you are excited, it's not true happiness.
Okay. It's kind of a deep thing. Yeah, there's a difference between excitement and happiness. What we mean by Buddhism, in Buddhism, by happiness is a mind of peace, a mind of equanimity, a mind of clarity, like a still forest pool that can reflect things, that's not reactive. But most of us, what we think is happiness is like a state of excitement, which is a kind of distraction, if you like. And I think you can only come to that kind of peace through meditation and through living in the present moment. And gradually you'll calm down and you'll understand, like, once you find real happiness, then excitation doesn't really appeal to you that much anymore. But it's not like you should just force yourself unnaturally. Like, I'm Buddhist so I can't have fun. Yeah, it's not like that. You should be natural and try to keep the 5 precepts and be kind. And gradually as you meditate more, as you live in the present moment more, you'll naturally kind of become a little deeper in your understanding of what true happiness is. But I don't think it's possible to enjoy the spiritual path if you don't have a little bit of happiness, you know, in whatever your limited understanding of happiness is. You need a bit of happiness and friendship, and that you shouldn't be too strict with people in their first retreat, you know. You don't want to be sloppy either, like not too loose, not too tight. If the string is too tight, it will snap. And if it is too loose, the music will not play. So with your mind, it's a delicate thing. You don't want to be too tight in your meditation and your practice, like some kind of fundamentalist Buddhist, but you also don't want to be too loose. Yeah? You want to find the perfect balance. And then gradually, as you meditate, as you practice, that kind of deeper understanding of what happiness is will naturally arise, naturally occur. Anything else? You're all like kids who just want to go home waiting for the bell to ring. No? It's from Thailand. It means the awakened mind. It's probably like a bad version of it. Do you know what it means? The Buddha has one here, yeah? Well, that's my understanding. Maybe you should ask the Google Guru. But that's my understanding, that it means the awakened mind. Yeah. It might be, who knows what. I often laugh when I see people with some kind of Asian letters tattooed on their arm. You know, it could say anything like, you know, stupid tourist or white devil. You know, but they're like, oh, see, man, it's so spiritual. I got these Japanese letters on my arm. No other questions? You feeling good? You digging my vibe? I'm sure it's very different to like a talk by a very upright traditional monk or nun. But my experience over the years is if I just gave you a very traditional talk that you just would fall asleep, so I've done my best to entertain as well as inform. So I'm going to randomly point at someone and they're going to say what they got from the talk. Yes, that would be you with the glasses going like this. Yep. Yes, stripy t-shirt, tell me.
What I got from this talk was, well from what I hear about your past life, well, people change a lot, and to get into Buddhism, it's a very, well, from what I see about how people enter the Buddhism. You know, it doesn't matter like what sort of person you are, it takes a lot of initiative. And yeah, it's just that people don't, it doesn't matter like from where you're from, from what nationality, it's Buddhism is quite
be understood individually, each by the wise, each for themselves alone. Be a light unto yourself, a refuge unto yourself. Yeah. Yes, lady behind the plastic bag. What did you get from this talk? Is this just ego massage for me, really? No, I'm just trying to understand like what you've taken away, what you've got. Well, thank you for inviting me, and I hope, I'm really impressed that you've got so many people here, because I've been to some university Buddhist groups and it's like two people and the librarian, and the librarian's like, it's time to pack up. So yeah, I hope that you, like Australia is very multicultural, so I hope that you'll, you know, not just be a kind of Asian group, that you'll be inclusive, yeah? I know that this university is predominantly Asian, it seems that way. And I think it's great that you all work together so well. Like, I was so impressed by Bodhi Night, it was like, you know, a gala performance or something. But I think it's important to remember that, like, to be as inclusive as possible, and that it's not just a kind of special club, but it's like, you know, it's really for everyone. And yeah, I don't know. I think you're probably going in the right direction anyway, because you're like one of the bigger Buddhist groups. And just remember that Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, once said, surely spiritual friendship is half of the holy life. And the Buddha said, no, Ananda. Spiritual friendship is the whole of the holy life. So in your friendships in this group, you know, you'll make friendships that will last for a lifetime. So try to, and people's faith is involved, people's good wishes. So, you know, help, volunteer, and give the best of yourself, yeah? And try to welcome people, especially people that you feel may feel a little out of place, you know, because they're not from the same country as you, or, you know, just try to make them feel welcome. And don't just think, you know, I'm getting my degree and I'm out of here. Think what you can leave behind. Wherever you are, that's your home, yeah? So, try to leave something good behind for the next generation. And I'm doing a chanting, how do you say, fundraiser for Indian slum people. If any of you want to come, it's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. The flyers are here, and it's at Bondi. It's there's also a chanting CD of Buddhist chants, and I'll give your group one of the CDs gratis, so you can play it at your different events. And if any of you are interested in coming to India and volunteering, you're very welcome to do so. My website's there. If any of you have wealthy friends and family who could afford to sponsor a child for $40 a month, you can also say, okay, don't give me a present, give me that for my birthday. But don't underestimate your power to change the world. Even if you give $20, you know, it can help a woman give birth safely. Imagine if that woman was your sister. Yeah. So they're not so very different from us. So at the end of the day, we're all born with nothing and we leave this world with nothing. So in between, what we make of it is up to us. And what matters the most is the love we give, right? How kind we are. So I hope you've taken something positive away from this talk, and I'm sure they have some announcements to make. So feel free to take one of these flyers. And if you have any questions, you can find my email on the website, or you can ask Emily. I'm very happy to be part of your new year of Dharma talks. And thank you. And we always dedicate the good energy in the end. So my friends will become nothing. My foes will become nothing. I too will become nothing. Just like a dream experience, whatever things I enjoy will become a memory. Whatever is past will not be seen again. The Buddhas neither wash ill deeds away with water, nor remove beings' sufferings with their hands. Beings are released through the teachings of the truth, the final reality. Thus, by the virtue that has accumulated through all that I have done, may the pain of all living beings be cleared away. I will liberate those not liberated. I will release those not released. I will relieve those unrelieved, and place living beings in God. May all beings be well and happy. May they flourish, and may they never be separated from the path to awakening, and travel far to complete freedom from suffering. Good luck with everything.